good morning. Is that because of last night? Ohio State lost the game. I don't hear you. How bad? Well, I didn't watch.
It was like 30-something. Let me look at it real quick.
Really bad.
It was
31-16. That's, you know, Jane said that's what it was. Yeah. Wow. Okay. I didn't watch. I was actually trying to do this talk. It's funny. Last night, I have Word on this little machine here. And when I went to close out, it was a draft, and there were two options. One is to delete, and the other is to save. Yes. Delete. So, no problem. I go back, and I start doing it. And then the keyboard went out. So I had to go out to Walmart and buy a keyboard. And the fella said, it's universal. I get back, it's not universal, so I have to go back again. So I started around 10 o'clock last night redoing this talk. Actually, my wife said, and I always try these things out on my wife, that the second was better than the first. So there was some good in that. We'll see, right? We'll see. So to begin, what I'd like to do, first of all, my name is Tom Broadwater. I'm Resident Lama down at Athens, and I get the privilege and pleasure of coming up here once a month, either to give a talk or to do Nundro practice. Just a couple of days ago, we did a Nune, a whole weekend, and it was wonderful. If it ever comes up again, I hope you consider coming. There was about nine of us. It's a great, great weekend. We had a wonderful place to go to, St. Peter and Paul's retreat place. It used to be an old seminary over Newark. A wonderful place to spend the weekend. So let's begin by taking refuge. And if you don't know refuge prayer, that's no problem. Just dedicate this time to the benefit of all beings. That would be good enough. That'd be great. But if you know the refuge prayer, you can say it along with me. Sanje Chudang Soki Chok Nam La John Chu Badu Dai Ni Kyap Su Chi Dai Ni Jin So Chi Pei So Nam Ki Dro La Pin Chir Sanje Dru Par Sho Sanje Chu Dan So Ki Chot Nam La John Chu Badu Dagni Kyap Su Chi Dagi Jin So Chi Pei So Nam Ki Dro La Pin Shir Sanje Dru Par Sho Sanje Chu Dang So Ki Chok Nam La John Chu Badu Dagni Kyap Su Chi Dagi Jin So Chi Pei So Nam Ki Dro La Pin Chi Sanje Dru Par Sho. So, actually, the second time around, I gave this talk a name. And the talk is the Bodhisattva vow engendering bodhicitta through the path of a good heart. A long title. So let's take each one of these. Bodhisattva is basically within the Mahayana, the vehicle of the Buddha, the second turning of the wheel, is the hero of that vehicle, sort of the saint of the Mahayana. And the vow is the bodhisattva vow. The vow, first of all, is take it this way. A vow is sort of like what forms our behavior. It gives us boundaries, container for our behavior. So the vow of a bodhisattva is basically the vow that now until they actually reach Buddhahood will work for the benefit of all beings. And that when we are working towards Buddhahood, we're working for all beings. I want to put in a little plug here. Can I do that? The plug is this. On October the 6th through the 8th, Kempo Karta Rinpoche, who was basically the founder of this center, is going to give the Bodhisattva vow. And if you have not taken it, it's a great time to do it. There's going to be a carpool from this center to go up to Woodstock, New York, which is in the Catskill Mountains, beautiful place. And you would be given the vow by a bodhisattva himself in one of the most beautiful surroundings ever and in one of the most inspiring shrine rooms in North America. Has anyone got sort of like interested in that now?
You can have me at Woodstock.
Okay, well, if anyone's interested in that, there'll be some messages out on that, and there'll be carpools from here to go. So consider making the road trip. It's a wonderful, wonderful trip. So we'll talk a little bit about the Bodhisattva vow. It's the wish to attain Buddhahood for the welfare of all beings. It's called the most noble of thoughts. It's called the precious jewel of the mind. And as I said before, it's the beginning of the Mahayana path. And arousing this desire to benefit beings is the main aspect to the Mahayana path. Usually, more often than not, we need assistance to do that. To engender that sort of bodhicitta, that will or desire to benefit all beings, is engendered through the kindness and the encouragement of an authentic lama like Kempo Karta Rinpoche. And when he gives that vow, he represents all the Buddhas because, in my estimation, in most people's estimation, he perfectly upholds and transmits that vow to others. So again, October the 6th through the 8th, that vow will be given in New York, in Woodstock. So let's begin by explaining how we develop bodhicitta. First of all, we have to train our minds. And there are different ways to do that. Following Shantideva, who was a 8th century saint, he says we first should train in recognizing that we and others, all others, are the same. We're all the same. That we all share the same nature. And next, after recognizing that, he says we train in exchanging ourselves for others. And finally, he says, then we learn to give greater importance to others than we do to ourselves. And through that process, bodhicitta arises. Atisha, another great saint in Tibet, taught instructions on the path. For example, he said, understand all beings have been our mothers. Because we have lived endless lifetimes. All beings have at one time or another been our mothers, and remember the great kindness they showed us when they were our mothers, and repay that kindness by being kind to others. training in these instructions one by one, bodhicitta eventually arises, that desire to want to benefit other beings because they are our mothers. The senior instructors here at this center have been going over a Lojong. Have some of you been involved in that, listening to the Lojong slogans and so forth? We're doing the same thing down in Athens. And so it is through those instructions, those slogans, we learn how to train our minds to see other beings. Another way, and this is the way I'm going to talk about it today, is a method taught by Patril Rinpoche, who's another great saint within the Buddhist tradition. And he talks about the four boundless qualities, otherwise known as the four immeasurables. Training repeatedly in these four instructions, we develop bodhicitta, the desire to benefit other beings through our attainment of Buddhahood. When these four qualities arise in our mind, automatically bodhicitta will arise. It's just natural. It's the way it is. And these four boundless qualities are expressed in aspiration in the following way. May all beings possess happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from sorrow and the cause of sorrow. May all beings remain undivided from joy that is beyond sorrow. And finally, may all beings rest in great equanimity beyond attachment and aversion. In general, these four immeasurables are listed in the order I just described them: boundless love, boundless compassion, boundless rejoicing, and boundless impartiality. Boundless here means if we're going to be a bodhisattva, it has to extend to all beings everywhere, not just to certain beings, but to all beings. That's what makes it boundless. And you can imagine if we meditate in this way, we accumulate boundless merit for doing so. So let's first take boundless impartiality. May all beings come to rest in great equanimity beyond attachment and aversion. When practicing, we begin actually with impartiality. If we can accomplish boundless impartiality, then we accomplish boundless love, compassion, and rejoicing. It automatically will arise if we're impartial. Without impartiality, practicing love, compassion, and rejoicing becomes partial and one-sided. Partial and one-sided means that although we have love in our minds, we only have it for certain individuals, right? So we would only have love, for example, for our family or for our relations, people we love. And if we don't have impartiality, we won't be able to have love and compassion and rejoicing for our enemies, for those that we don't particularly like. So really what this means, impartiality means having a balanced perspective, recognizing the equality of us all. Right now, when we see misery of someone that we dislike or feel indifferent to, we don't question their suffering. It's their karma. So we want to develop that kind of love, compassion, and rejoicing in the good of others, no matter who they are. And we'll talk about that a little bit more later. Let's now talk about boundless love. May all beings possess happiness in the cause of happiness. Once we have developed boundless impartiality towards all beings, we can develop boundless love for them. All beings are equal in not living in ultimate happiness. Everybody's in that boat. Nobody is different than that. We all are suffering. And the desire for them to be happy, all of them, is love. We take all beings as the subject of our boundless love. In the beginning, it's almost impossible to wish all beings to be in a state of happiness and comfort, right? I mean, that's, if you try to do that, it's like, you know, vague, and we sort of lose our focus. It doesn't mean too much. So instead of cultivating this sort of fuzzy love for all humanity, we cultivate it for those first closest to us. Next, we move to those who are neutral, and then finally to our enemies and people that we conceive of as being enemies. So in doing it in that way, our capacity for love expands. Shanti Deva, I keep reciting these saints from our history, but they had some really good things to say. Shanti Deva said, whenever you look at a being, look in an honest and loving manner. So when you look at anyone, your motivation should be honest and loving. Gazing upon others with compassion and love, they will be more likely to experience comfort and happiness. Last night, I was telling you, my keyboard went out. So I go there, and the guy gives me one cent. It's universal, and it will go back, and it's not. So I take it back. Guess what? When I take it back to him and he says, I don't deal with that, you have to take it up front, I did not gaze upon him with love and compassion. I laugh at that too, but then I think about that. Here's this poor guy who probably makes a little bit above minimum wage, who's, I don't think Walmart's known for their human and labor relations. He's probably being mistreated himself. And here it's this snarly old man comes in and gives him a bad look. And we left him with this dis-ease for the rest of the evening, maybe. Small thing. But is it really small? Gazing upon others with compassion and love, they will more likely experience comfort and happiness. Staring at them with hatred or anger. Now, I didn't stare at him with hatred or anger. It was like irritation. But if I'm honest with myself, there was anger there. It was just enough that I could plausibly deny that I was angry if he asked me. You know what I'm saying? So staring with hatred and anger, they will feel uneasy. Compassion and love should be expressed even when simply looking at others, because you are actually putting into action what you're trying to practice in meditation. Compassion and love will then arise automatically and continuously, both in meditation and in post-meditation. Patro Rinpoche says, even when you look at someone, look with a smile in a way that eases their mind. Don't look with hatred or angry eyes. He further says, this is a little warning to us all, Don't try to have others see you as a bodhisattva because of your pleasant behavior and speech. Don't act like a hypocrite. But rather, from the depths of your heart, aspire to benefit others. Consider nothing but their happiness. That fella last night, did I contribute to his happiness, or did I contribute a little bit more to his unhappiness? And since we know all beings suffer, I was not being helpful. Make the following prayer again and again. This is what Pata Rinpoche says. In birth after birth and life after life, throughout all my lives, may I not harm even a single hair of another being. May I always help them. Another way, listen to another Buddhist saint, Atisha, when he says, acting kindly to travelers from far away, to those who are ill for a long time, to our aged parents, is the same as meditating on emptiness. It's as valuable, or even more valuable, to treat those folks with love and compassion is more valuable than meditating on emptiness. Because at the heart of emptiness is the heart which is compassion. Pala Rinpoche further says, boundless love is like the love of a mother bird or a father bird for her chicks. At first, she makes a soft, comfortable nest, and then she covers the chicks with her wings so they are warm. With behavior like this, completely gentle, she protects the chicks until they are able to fly away. This is the love, boundless love, that we are to practice. This is the way we should treat all beings. Now let's go to boundless compassion. May all beings be free from sorrow and the causes of sorrow. All beings are suffering. All beings are suffering, and our aspiration is that they should all be free of that suffering. As with love, so with compassion. We begin the practice of boundless compassion by focusing on a particular being. And in this case, we take the most extreme. We look at folks who are suffering the most. Right now, we could say the people who are in the way of the hurricane. We could think of the people down in Mexico in that horrible earthquake, or in the Caribbean where all those folks have lost their homes, everything. We could offer our compassion, our love to them. So we start with the most extreme. We could also do those that are really ill and in great distress, those that are dying, and make the wish that we could free them from their suffering. Compassion in this way will arise really easily when we think of all those folks. But the funny thing is that as we develop this practice, it doesn't matter the degree of the person suffering. It doesn't matter. Why? Because we are all suffering. So we can offer our compassion to everyone. Not a single being in the universe is free from negativity and suffering. And so we practice until our love and our compassion extends to all beings. Now, keep in mind, this is a gradual process. You know, it's not like I go last night from being angry because I didn't get my the right thing for my iPad to loving all beings. That doesn't happen overnight. It's a gradual process that we develop. And we're not to worry that occasionally we fall back on that. That's why we take the Bodhisattva vow over and over. Many times when I was in retreat, we did it 3 times a day. Because those little acts that we perform that are nasty, but, you know, small-minded and petty, they diminish over time our vow to benefit other beings. And if we don't once in a while take stock of that and recommit ourselves to that kind of a vow, it just sort of peters out and it gets lost. In regards to compassion, Pātra Rinpoche tells us, think of a being in extreme torment, such as a criminal thrown into jail who is about to be executed, or a little animal in front of a butcher, or in a factory farm slaughterhouse about to be slaughtered. Feel the same love toward that being as you would if it were your own mother or your own child in that situation. That's what's taught. In another place he says, our compassion should be like a parent without arms whose only child is being swept away by a raging river. Unbearable anguish. Think about that. Because all beings are being carried away by suffering. At this point, all we can have is the aspiration to help. So we pray, may I become able to protect all beings. That's what I want to do. That's how big the aspiration should be. Finally, let's look at boundless joy. May all beings be undivided from sacred joy, which is free of sorrow. At first, to develop this attitude, focus on those close to you who are happy and content and who have many positive qualities. Someone I think of is Lama Kathy. And rejoice in them. Be happy that they have these qualities. The problem so often, even with those closest to us who have qualities higher than ourselves or more than our own, is to be jealous. And believe me, we can spend a heck of a lot of time. In fact, we can spend a lifetime of being jealous and envious of those folks. And instead of seeing their positive qualities, we look to see their faults. They're not all that great. Just look at such and such. We can do that. There's no merit in that. It will not help us and it will not help them. They say that if we can rejoice in the qualities of others, whatever they have attained, by our rejoicing in their attainment, we merit the same. We get the same. Jealousy and envy are the death of spirituality. So we rejoice in other people's good qualities. And then we work down. And this is hard, and I haven't been able to do it yet. But we actually rejoice in those that mistreat us when they prosper. That's pretty hard. But that's the boundless quality of these aspirations. And actually, we say to ourselves, not only do I rejoice in what they have, but I hope they get more. Now, in the beginning, when we do this, it seems pretentious. It's maybe not fully from our heart yet, but that's why we practice over and over and over again until it becomes a natural part of us. Because this anger and jealousy, what are they? They are nothing but habits that we formed from beginningless time. This habit of being jealous, this habit of being angry, all those things are habits. And if they're habits, they can be changed to habits of love. Not to say it's easy or it's going to be overnight, but it can be if you practice. So we practice until they're second nature to us. All these qualities and aspirations could be shortened into one phrase: a good heart. Train yourself to have a good heart all the time. Without a good heart, our practice is useless. Thoughts of love, compassion, rejoicing, and impartiality are all aspects of a good heart. If we haven't examined ourselves to see if we have a good heart, and if instead there is negativity in our hearts, our prostrations, our prayers, our seemingly good acts, and our ritual are just pretense. They're just nonsense. We might as well not do them if we don't have that good heart. So it's very important to develop love, compassion, impartiality, the four immeasurables. And so what I'd like to do right now is do a little practice. What time we got? Oh, we got time. So we'll do a little practice. And what we'll do is we'll contemplate. It's a little different than meditation. In meditation, the strategy in meditation is when a thought arises, we drop it, right? Well, in contemplation, we actually take a thought and dwell on it and see where it goes, where we go with it. That's contemplation. But just like in meditation, when our mind wanders off about what am I going to do after lunch or what am I going to do, you come back to that thought. So the thoughts that we're going to dwell on in contemplation are the four immeasurables. So get comfortable and we'll contemplate these thoughts together. So if you want to close your eyes, you're welcome to do that. So the first thought I'd like for you to contemplate for a moment is, may all beings possess happiness and the cause of happiness. Make that your aspiration. Thinking of those closest to you, wishing that they be truly happy. Think of their kindness to you, how they've cared about you. And that how they too have suffered. Your love is a return for their love to you. Send them your love. Now, think about someone maybe in this room that you don't really know, haven't made any contact with, and in that respect, sort of indifferent to, and send out your love to them. Now think in particular of someone that has irritated you recently or made you angry or you may even consider your enemy. Now, finally, may all beings remain undivided from sacred joy. Think of those who may have qualities far greater than your own and rejoice in that. And actually say to yourself, may that those qualities increase. May they be boundless. And then extend that to all beings. Now just relax. Just relax. Let your mind be like an open space. Just relax. You don't have to think anything. Allow yourself to relax. Okay. Thank you very much. If anybody has any comments, questions, or thoughts, there's a microphone over there. I was so clear, wasn't I? We can end up early if you like. Would you like that? Okay. We'll end up early. What I'd like for you to do is to take out the red book, and I need one. So could I share one with somebody? I got it. Okay, yeah. And you can look off it. And I think we go to page 25, but I'm not sure. Hold on just for a minute. No, we'll go to page 30. And these are called dedication prayers. And it's a great way to end any practice session. And we'll say it in English, because most of us don't know Tibetan, do we? Including myself. Through this virtue, may all beings gather the accumulations of merit and awareness. May they attain the two supreme kayas arising from merit and awareness. May precious bodhicitta arise within those where it has not arisen. Where it has arisen, may it not decline, but ever grow and flourish. By this merit, may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may I free all beings. The courageous Manjushri, who knows everything as it is, Samantabhadra, who also knows the same, and all the bodhisattvas, that I may follow in their path, I completely dedicate all this virtue. Through the blessing of the Buddha's attainment of the three bodies, through the blessing of the unchanging truth of the Dhammata, and through the blessing of the unwavering aspiration of the Sangha, may this dedication prayer be accomplished. May the glorious Lamas live long. May happiness and well-being arise for all sentient beings present throughout space. May I and all beings without exception, having gathered the two accumulations and purified the two obscurations, be swiftly established in the state of Buddhahood. So go out there this week and give people the gift of your smile. Thank you all.